Bo Akimovich, Director of Global E-Commerce for Clover Imaging Group, shares his professional journey and the challenges and benefits of selling remanufactured printer supplies. He discusses the characteristics of the printer supplies industry and the importance of sustainability. Bo also emphasizes the need to educate customers about the quality and cost-effectiveness of remanufactured products. He also described the challenges of selling uninteresting products and the importance of technical information and compatibility. Bo explains the onboarding process for dealers and the continuous development of their B2B platform. We've also discussed how Clover used customer feedback and data to improve the website and enhance the customer experience. Bo shares insights into the balance between offline and online strategies and the importance of integrating third-party systems through APIs, allowing customers to easily connect their system and access data. The conversation also explores the convergence of B2B and B2C in e-commerce, with a focus on personalization and data collection. Bo shares insights on international sales, payment methods, and selling on Amazon and other marketplaces. We've also discussed the role of AI in e-commerce, particularly in chatbot applications. This episode is packed with international e-commerce tips, so let's get started. Welcome to the Ecom Pulse, your heartbeat to the world of e-commerce. I'm your host, Eitan Kotter. Join us as we meet with industry leaders, marketing experts, and the innovative minds behind the tech that is shaping the e-commerce future. So plug in, gear up, and get ready for a pulse-pounding journey into the heart of e-commerce. Bo, how are you? I'm super excited to have you here.
Good. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Bo, you are now 10 years already in the US, but you have a very interesting story, right? Both on your personal life, I would say, but also on your professional life. So let's start maybe from the professional side of things. I know you are with Clover Imaging Group. You're doing amazing on B2B side. Give us your story, and you can start from whatever you want.
Yeah, I'm currently a director of global e-commerce for Clover Imaging Group. Started 15 years ago in Europe for a Swiss company that was actually a competitor of Clover. Mm-hmm. For those that don't know, Clover is selling printer supplies such as cartridges and printer parts, so laser cartridges, ink cartridges. 5 years into my employment at the Swiss company, Clover acquired us. Best way to beat the competition, right? So with that acquisition came my team and myself. And then a few years into that acquisition, I was transferred over into the United States.
Amazing. Just to put things into perspective, we talk about printer supplies, but it's a huge company, thousands of people, right?
Yeah, that's right. Thousands of people, millions of dollars of revenue.
Yeah.
It's a very interesting industry. Not a lot of people know about it, but it's a very green and sustainable industry. We are eliminating a lot of waste from going to the landfills by giving these products new life.
Amazing. You mentioned interesting. So what are you passionate about that specific industry?
Well, first of all, I found myself in this industry, and the more I was in it, the more interesting it got because it has its own challenges. You know, as I said, not a lot of people know about remanufactured products. If somebody has a printer in their house from an OEM, the first thing they're going to look into is an OEM product. And that's how they kind of get you. You get to buy a cheaper printer, but over time you pay a lot for supplies. What we do is we take the empty cartridges, the original cartridges, and we give them a new life, and you're basically getting equal or better quality at some, and you know, in some cases, for a much lesser price. So I would say it's almost an easy product to sell, but then there are a lot of challenges about questions about quality and stuff like that that we need to overcome and help our customers, which are actually dealers, and their customers understand why this product deserves to be given a try at least.
Yeah. And you've been doing this in a very, very large scale, and primary the business is B2B, right? You're selling to dealers, trying to provide them variety of, let's say, B2B related knowledge, content, experiences. Tell us a little bit about those dealers, who they are, and what are the characteristics of the industry as a whole?
Well, first of all, characteristic of our product and the industry, it's a very uninteresting product visually. It's a supply. It's an, people need cartridges. But it, when it comes to selling them, images are great, but they're not as fun and interesting as, for example, selling a phone or a, you know, a laptop or something.
So we're surprised what influencer can sell on TikTok these days, right?
Yeah, well, I'd like to see one try to sell toner cartridges. It's an idea, right? Yeah, but then we really have to focus on the technical aspect of our products, making sure that our customers and their customers understand that this is actually a product that fits their printer. You know, a lot of our products have a wide compatibility list, and compatibility is actually a cartridge that goes into multiple printers. So that's the challenge as well. While OEMs sell a cartridge for one model printer, we actually advertise it that, hey, this cartridge works in this set of printers. Sometimes it's even cross OEM.
Can you share with us some of the AOVs here, quantities of a typical order?
I mean, our dealers sell to their customers on a need basis. So quantity per order, it's about, you know, two cartridges, but there are multiple orders per day usually. So based on that volume that our dealers have, we offer them various channels through which they can buy. Obviously, you can use the website to a certain number of daily orders. But after that, it becomes kind of, you know, very time consuming to place 60 or more orders per day. That's when we introduce them to other available channels.
Got it. So how the journey looks like? I mean, it's clear that the demand is out there. If they need a solution, they know where to go. What's the process that they're undergoing, you know, when they need to purchase something?
Are we talking about dealers or their customers?
Yes, the dealers. Yeah,
your so dealers. Our dealers, you know, as every B2B, you have an onboarding setup process with Clover. You cannot just come to our website and purchase stuff. So that's another challenge of the B2B sphere. So previously, a lot of B2B companies in this industry had everything behind the wall. So you could not see products, you could not see details until you sign up, you're greeted by an account representative, you would have your account set up. And then a few days later, you would log in and start seeing, oh, this is what I can buy. We took a different approach, and we started this 12 years ago, probably, this approach of a B2C approach to B2B.
Kind of a guest mode approach. Yeah.
Exactly.
Wow, nice.
And even, you know, you can see a lot of products outside of the login. There's no pricing, but then you have to be very clear on how do you purchase these products. You know, if you're a reseller or a dealer, which is our customer base, click here to register. And even that at the beginning was kind of complicated because it took a while for a sales rep to reach out to you to get access and so on. So what we did is similar to what you say, it's not a guest mode. We called it a pending mode. So I can register on Clover's website. I can log in even before my verification process has gone through some limited functionality there. I still cannot purchase, but now I have my details in there. I have my account manager assigned to me. So we kind of get them through the door, greet them, and then work through the process of setting them up until they're ready to order.
Yeah. So what's usually the setup time if I'm a new dealer? I'm just
a day or two usually.
Day or two.
Yeah.
So you open the request, someone needs to verify it, qualify it.
Correct. Yeah, we have to vet all of our registrations. Yeah. We even had some OEMs try to register and gain access to get an insight into our business, but we
got
them.
Okay. This is not AI, right? It's a human touch.
Obviously. It is. Yeah.
We talk about
value that human touch a lot. Yeah.
Yeah, sure. This is very, very interesting. And what are there are like very, very, let's call them tools or some stickiness functionalities that you've implemented to implement a more holistic process or more streamlined process in your B2B platform, right? So can you share some of those? What makes your B2B unique, let's say, versus B2C? And I know things are emerging these days, but let's try to deep dive a little bit further on this B2B side of things.
Sure. Well, first thing we had to tackle was the purchasing process, right? As with any website, built the website, we've created the cart, the search functionality, which was very important. And my philosophy of the website development approach is that it should be continuous. It should never be done. There should be continuous small changes applied to the website, both from functionality standpoint and design. Because what I really dread a lot is those five-year big redesigns, redevelopments. I think they are wasting time for the company, wasting resources, but they also require the customers to adjust to a whole new look, feel, functionality. When you take a look at our website today, this website was built, I'd say, 8 years ago. Mm-hmm. There were some infrastructure changes and we had to build it. But compared to 8 years ago, it's a completely different website. However, there was no big redevelopment involved in it. It was continuous changes on every aspect of the website, which makes the friction of customer adapting to the new website almost non-existent. So you mentioned a lot of tools. So, and I said, we first focus on, you know, the website as in general, card search, all that. But then we started talking with our customer support team and asking them, what are the things that the customers are calling in over the phone most about? What are they looking for? Is it to get the invoice history? And, you know, I mentioned our website is just one of the ways people can, our customers can order from us. So we needed to make sure that, let's say, order history from different channel and invoices from different channels on those accounts are available on our website. So we eliminated that. So what's the next thing they call about? So, you know, kind of going from the most frequent reasons people call us and chat and stuff like that, and making those functionalities, those features available on the website for them to use 24/7.
Yeah. And where are you in terms of those two, let's say, philosophies, right? Getting customer feedback, like even on a daily basis, and aggregate it to a certain level where you feel, okay, I need to make a change, or no, I have my own vision about customer journeys, and this is how I want this to look like, and I need to educate my consumers to join that process. Where are you in this, you know, equation?
It's a fine balance, I think. Yeah. I always listen to customers. You know, we do as a company, and I think that's important. Of course, there are some things that we have to introduce and teach the customers about. We've had a certain set of customers that were hesitant to use the website, probably because bad experience they might have had before from, you know, different suppliers. But then we even approach them with webinars. We would set up a 30-minute call and basically show them the website. This is what you can do. And that usually resulted in, oh, I had no idea it was this easy. So I don't like huge, epic, year-long projects. I like to start quick, you know, get a project or a new functionality out of the gate, 80% done. I may think that certain things could be added to this functionality to make it better, but that's just my assumption. I would rather launch it, of course, everything has to be tested and prove that it works, and then listen to the feedback and then introduce a new version that is based on that feedback and actual customer needs.
Yeah. So you mentioned...
I'm in the middle.
In the middle. Yeah, I guess this is the right place to be. So you mentioned that you're getting feedback from customer support, and probably you're reading, like, you have that one-on-one. I don't know if it's still there. Probably you've done it for years. You have this one-on-one mentality, trying to understand, like, on the individual level. But obviously, when the business has grown substantially, how do you make decision? I mean, how do you analyze things beyond, you know, the customer feedback and testimonials?
We collect a lot of data. Mm-hmm. So I know it kind of sounds creepy, but we collect everything our customers are doing on our website. From what are they searching for, what pages are opening, in what order. And, you know, I think we have more data than we are processing right now, which is good. And, you know, who knows what we're going to need it for, whether it's for marketing automation. We have a great marketing team that we work with who manages automated emails, and we kind of support them with that data from our e-commerce website. So, yeah, we're not afraid of big data. Not at all, especially with AI emerging. It's going to be easier and easier to use that data and to, you know, get some useful information out of it.
Yeah. So what are the things that you are looking for when you analyze the data? Are you looking for the good things, the other things you need to improve? I mean, how do you analyze this?
Oh, there are no bad things on our website. Our website is amazing. No, of course, there's. We'll look for everything. You know, we try to look for patterns. You know, if a customer is going to our website a lot, for example, searching for a certain product type or a certain product keyword, we look if they are actually purchasing those products, right? So because we built this website that has a lot of information, a lot of very accurate technical information about our products, we are always concerned, like, are customers using us for resource purposes and then maybe purchasing somewhere else? So this is kind of information that is useful for sharing with the sales team, for example. Mm-hmm. Hey, you have this account that is continuously looking for products, looking for certain types of products, but they're not actually purchasing. So it kind of gives our sales team something to call them about and discuss what's the reason you're interested in these products but not purchasing. So,
yeah.
You know, those I would qualify as bad things, right? But then there are good things, you know, again, going back to patterns is, you know, dealer really is somebody who has a customer that has a need for a product, right? So we try to help our dealers be more efficient. One tool, for example, that we introduced about, I'd say a year ago now, is we look at their cart patterns compared to the ship to address. So one dealer is shipping to hundreds of different addresses. Mm-hmm. And printers have these, they have supplies like cartridges, but they have parts as well. These parts have to be replaced at certain page count. It's like a mileage for a printer.
Yeah.
So let's say it's a drum. A drum is usually replaced every time there's four cartridges cycled through the printer. So our checkout looks at these things and then recommends, like, hey, it looks like this location may be due for a drum replacement. So that's an example of using this data, this large data, for, you know, upselling. And it's been very efficient, actually. Our dealers appreciate that because it helps them then have a conversation with their customer saying, hey, it's been a while. Should we ship you this? And they're like, yeah, let's do that.
And it happens right in real time at that checkout page, or it's like following up out? Okay.
No, no, it happens in real time on the checkout page. So, you know, even checkout page changes. I've first been taking an approach where a checkout page should be very simple, very focused on let's get them across the finish line.
Yeah, but as fast as we can.
Get rid of the menu on the top. Just keep the logo. Don't let them go back easily. And, you know, standard e-commerce practices. But we've seen that recommendations on the checkout page are efficient, and our customer base appreciates it. So, you know, who cares about standards if our customers like it?
Yes. Yes. Interesting. So you know that they are happy with it, they're using it, so you actually enhance it and you keep it there and try to optimize it as far as you can. Exactly. Specifically about your offline online strategies, are you what are your thoughts on that? I mean, are you encouraging more dealers to go online, or you have a balanced view? I mean, you don't care. I mean, what's the strategy from offline versus offline in terms of, you know, the company goals?
Right. Well, first, let's specify what offline is. We don't have stores, right?
Yeah,
so we don't have brick and mortar stores. Mm-hmm. I would specify offline something that is more manual, such as orders through an email, orders through a phone, right?
Yeah.
Or a fax, actually. So, that has always been our target audience for automation. And we approach these customers directly and ask them, like, what is the reason you're still doing it over the phone versus using our website or any other available tool? Like, you know, we have APIs, we have XMLs. What is the reason for that? Sometimes it's just, oh, I wasn't aware that it's this simple. There's less and less of those. Sometimes it's, oh, I just love dealing with so-and-so over the phone. Mm-hmm. She's always very helpful. Mm-hmm. But we learn from that. What is it that this person is providing that, you know, maybe lacking from your online experience? Yeah, so again, it's our target audience for sure for the web team and e-commerce team. But if somebody's got valid arguments why they prefer it that way, we're not going to shut it off for sure.
Okay. So it's still there. You're not going to shut it off because you see the dealers are still using it, right?
Correct. Yeah. You know, I mentioned fax. You know, there's still customers that, you know, for example, Amish groups in the United States, they're not going to use the website. So you have to keep that channel open. So I just recently found that out. And that is, you can't give me a more valid argument to say, okay, we have to keep this.
Interesting. Interesting. And obviously in a B2B scenario, there are a lot of like third-party systems that needs to be integrated to your e-commerce platform and like APIs, or let's say an open API or some agility in the integration and fast onboarding of third-party services is very, very important. And I know you've been innovating a lot on this space. What are you doing specifically on the API gateway side of things?
Yeah, so we have an in-house web development team. So we're not working with any specific platform. Our e-commerce solutions are homegrown solutions that, you know, our amazing team has built. And that is a great thing. That saves on resources. It saves on finding good partners and explaining them how our business works. Our team has been with the company for, you know, I would say an average of 10 years. For our team members, so they know our company in and out. However, that created a problem of, you know, you're creating this silo where things are happening in the industry. Tools are coming out that, you know, you could be missing out, or it could be a very time-consuming solution to replicate. So what we did is we made sure that all of the functionality on our website that our customers can do through the interface, from, you know, searching products, looking at pricing, placing orders, checking order history, invoices, is available through an API connection. So anybody that is a dealer or customer of ours is able to just go on our website, enable an API connection, and start integrating their systems. That was the first reason why we kind of did the API. Make those connections readily and easily available to our customers. But that also then opened us up to other solutions, software as a service solutions that are available to integrate with, because API is a universal way of integrating and everybody appreciates it.
What are the major reason why dealers want to integrate via API? What are the major benefits that they get?
So one of the biggest reasons is everybody's going e-commerce. Everybody understands e-commerce is what you need as a business. You need to be able to sell to your customers through your website. We don't want our dealers wasting time setting products up on their shop, you know, worrying about product details, attributes, and data. We have this data, and we want to have easy ways for our dealers to access this data. So one of the most common uses of an API is they integrate it with their website. Their website automatically refreshes the product database that they're buying from Clover. But then it also makes it easy if they have an order on their website, they can send the order over to us easily with a click of a button. Sometimes they don't even review it. They just automatically send it over. And then as a last step, they integrate the order status data back to their website, you know, with has the order shipped, the expected delivery date, tracking number, and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So, you know, making our dealers more efficient has always been one of the priorities.
Of course, of course. And what do you think today, I mean, on the D2C side of things, you see so many, you know, developments, both on the payment terms, you know, with subscriptions and buy now, pay later. I mean, it's ever evolving type of payments. Also on the shipping side, all the back end with supply chain, and on the variety of integration. I mean, like at Shopify, you go to the marketplace, there are, you know, tens of thousands of apps. I mean, those ecosystems on one side are becoming complex, but on the other side, they're very, very easy to integrate and quickly to adapt on some of the platforms. What are the real differences that you see today between B2B and D2C, or maybe they are converging?
You know, I think the differences are getting less and less noticeable, at least if you're doing B2B correctly. All of our customers are B2C customers somewhere, whether it's Amazon or Walmart. So that's why we always had this mentality of our B2B is working and looking like a B2C. Of course, you cannot just come to our website and purchase that. That's the fine line between our B2B and B2C. Yeah. But I think B2B has its own advantages as well over B2C. And it's that personal approach, and you know, every customer is a valued customer. You're not just a number. Everything is tailored to you as a customer. Personalization is one of the hot topics in e-commerce, and over both B2B and B2C. D2C, I think it's a lot easier done on B2B, where you know your customer better because you've had that interaction with them. You have to verify your customer. So you can personalize the shopping experience to your customer. You know, if they're more interested in one product over the other, you're going to support that journey on the website. And if the search results are coming up, you're going to put those products above some of the products that historically they're not interested in. And I understand it's not as easy to do on B2C, but it's something that B2C should be striving for. So it's kind of a, you know, somebody said B2B was borrowing from B2C a lot recently, but now it's time to kind of borrow back and see what B2B was doing good that can be applied to B2C. And one of the things is the data. So you have to start collecting the data as much as possible strategically. Of course, you cannot overwhelm your customer with questions about, you know, when's your birthday and so on, but you have to gradually obtain as much data as possible to achieve that personalization that we have on B2B.
Yes. And to put things also, even to make it more complicated, you're also doing business internationally, right? And over there, obviously, there are other issues that you need to take care of. Taxes, languages, shipping. What are you doing on that front?
Well, you know, internationally, for example, selling in Canada, one of the requirements is obviously the language difference. We have Canadian French that always has to be present on the website, you know, so that's always been, I wouldn't say a challenge, but it's something that we have to take care of. We also sell in Latin America, so not a lot of challenges if you prepare yourself for it, I would say.
Yeah. So these usually transactions that are paid by some kind of a credit line that they're established with you, or they use credit card, or it's a combination of things? Both.
Yeah. Both. Some customers have terms. Some customers prefer to pay with credit cards. You know, selling to dealers, you also have different scenarios. You may have a small office dealer, office supplies dealer. It's a small company operating locally in a certain state in the United States. But then you have these bigger strategic customers that may have different stores, brick and mortar stores across the U.S. that are that are allowed or can directly purchase from their vendors. So then, you know, how do we create an account that has, I wouldn't call them sub accounts, but users that each of them has their own credit card that gets charged? And, you know, again, it's just a matter of developing correctly and listening to the customer base.
Yes, nice, nice. And no, it's really, really interesting. I mean, the B2B scenario, because there are a lot of, like, from one side, you know, unique things that you need to implement. Like one, this thing that you've mentioned right now, that used to be like a probably 1 year project just to implement, you know, open account, credit line versus credit card purchase for the same account or a sub account. So it's very encouraging to see that it can be implemented in a very nice way, and also by an internal team that is probably working on a proprietary, you know, PHP type of development. So it's nice. By the way, are you selling also outside of your own domain, or like Amazon or like third party marketplaces? Or?
Yeah, we do have Amazon store as well. So, but our focus is our dealer channel for sure.
Yeah. So dealers can also, they go there and buy on Amazon, or there is any benefit?
No, dealers buy from us directly through one of the channels, but they can then, if they want to sell on Amazon as well, our products, they can, and we support them with product data and all the information they need to successfully sell on Amazon. You know, Amazon was one of the triggers why we introduced the rich product data. So obviously Amazon requires rich product data. And just like our website, our PIM software was in-house built. One of the things with remanufactured industry, it's not a very typical product. So to just go out and buy out of the box PIM software would require us to adjust a lot to
a lot of customization. Yeah.
Yeah. Or it would be very, very expensive to customize.
Yeah.
An out of the box software. This way we built a software that works exactly as we want it. So one of the things we built was a rich product content editor in our PIM software. So it's basically like a Word section of our PIM for each product where you can, you know, upload images and so basically copying that whole rich content section from Amazon, allowing us to write text, import images, videos, anything we need, you know, format the text. And all that is then exported out of our database through an API. We even have like flat files like Excel, CSV files that our dealers can export that include all that information. Another interesting part of sharing our data is we look at different popular platforms for e-commerce like Shopify, Ship for Shop, I think was what the 3D cart was called before, BigCommerce, WooCommerce, which is more flexible. But we look at all of these and we say, how do we create a file that our dealers can download, which is exactly the format that this platform asks for? You know, whether it's taxonomy for Shopify or, you know, attribute structure for WooCommerce. And our dealers are just able to go on our website, select the correct format, and they get a file that they can simply import into their platform without having map the, you know, most of those platforms have like pre-import. They tell you, oh, I found this column. It looks like it matches
this column. There's like mapping the columns or the fields.
Right.
Yeah.
Ours map flawlessly every time.
Flawlessly. Wow. Very nice. You have another startup inside the company. I'm sure you noticed, right?
Yeah. Talk about Shopify plugins, right?
Yeah, sure. Great. So, Bo, I think we deserve a medal because it's been 30 minutes that we are discussing without mentioning the word AI. But I guess it's a must, right? Definitely.
You're going to take away my medal? Okay.
Yeah. So we are taking it back right now. Sorry about that. What are your thoughts? I mean, how do you implement? Where is it going?
Well, AI, yeah, hot topic. I think we are in a good position as a company because we've collected a lot of data over the years, and we were not afraid to collect it, even if we did not use it at the time. But not just the data, the whole API capabilities that we introduced set us to use the AI very fast. The most obvious use of AI, I would say, in e-commerce currently is the chatbots, which, you know, are getting really good. A lot of people are, when they think about chatbots, think of those very, you know, selection type chatbots, which are basically like pointing you to a knowledge base article to look into things yourself.
Sure.
Whereas next gen or LLM chatbots are more, I would say they do a better job of impersonating a live agent. And as long as you don't hide that it's a chatbot, I think people are going to start valuing that. Yeah. You know, chatbot is available 24/7. You know, as a B2B company, we have limited chat live agent availability through, you know, Monday through Friday, 7 a.m., 7 p.m., which is great. And that should always be available. But having a chatbot that can answer some quick questions and provide an answer quickly is going to be, I think, more and more normal in e-commerce. You know, it just takes a few big guys to use that and show a lot of customers on their B2C journeys that this is actually good. That is going to make it so much easier for smaller e-commerce companies, regardless if it's B2B or B2C, to adapt as well.
And what are the KPIs for this new chatbot that you're working on? Is it providing more value, more content, improving conversions, reducing purchase time? I mean, all of the above.
All of those. All of the above, for sure. You know, one of the things that I like about LLM chatbots is that they're able to answer multiple question inputs. In our case, hey, what is a cartridge that works in this printer that you also have available? So that requires the chatbot. You know, in our case, it uses the API to grab information first about what is compatible with this printer, and then it does the second call to ask what's available, and then provides an answer back to the user. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that eliminates several clicks on the website, several inputs on the website. You have to search, you have to find, you have to click, you have to check the availability, you have to go back, see what else is available, if that one isn't. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be very efficient. And that kind of checks all the boxes you mentioned. It makes the shopping a lot quicker. It makes the customer support a lot more efficient, you know, and it eliminates a lot of questions that customers may have before they make a decision to make a purchase. At the same time, though, it's a fine line between focusing everybody on the chatbot versus using the website. Yeah. Chatbot can be as efficient as, oh, I need this. Do you have it? Yes. Can you place an order? Yes, let's do it. And you're done. But you've missed out on so much opportunities through that website journey to upsell, to cross-sell to your customer, to, you know, make them aware of some of the new products, some of the new programs and stuff like that. So it's a fine line and it will have to be carefully balanced.
Yes. Both for D2C brands, you know, they are trying so many things because customer acquisition has become so hard, right? So they're going multi-channel, they're okay sharing their profits with Amazon or, you know, Walmart or Etsy or some others. And they're trying a lot of things, and also, B2B is one of the things that they're trying, right? So obviously for any D2C, there is also, should be a B2B strategy. So what are some of the tips you can provide for any company who is trying to start with B2B?
I would say the biggest thing is every customer matters. Mm-hmm. The customer is not just a stat or data or a number in your database. Look at every customer, look at their needs, their specific goals that they have purchasing your products, and never discard a customer just because it may appear small in the beginning. There's always potential to be researched.
That's a big shift. I mean, kind of a culture change, I guess.
Right? It is. And I can see how it can be very unrealistic for a lot of customers.
Yeah.
A lot of e-commerce companies out there, because if you have hundreds of thousands of customers, you can't really look at each one of them separately. But if we're talking about a shift to B2B, like I want to move these to more of a B2B style purchasing, mm-hmm. then you're just doing a small portion of those. So
yeah,
it could, you make it more manageable by that.
Nice. Bo, what are some of the things that you are proud of in your career?
I'm definitely proud of our amazing in-house teams. You know, as I said, an average of almost 10 years in our company, them being happy with their job and what they're doing for this company being appreciated. That's the first thing I'm proud of. I'm proud of those that that manage our e-commerce. For sure, that's the biggest thing.
Nice, nice. And this is the time of the in the episode when I ask you about a fun fact about yourself. So
yeah.
Share with us something that most of your professional network are not aware of.
Well, let me start by pronouncing my last name. I think that's the thing that everybody gets wrong.
Okay.
Chimovich.
Chimovich.
So I'm originally from, well, now Serbia. But a fun fact is that I was born in a country that no longer exists, Yugoslavia, and I actually lived in four different countries without ever moving. So that's
wow, nice, nice. Wow, tell us more. How was it?
So, you know, I was young. It definitely built character. Tough times were always there. You know, Serbia has amazing people, but Serbians have gone through a lot, which made them, you know, very resilient, very resourceful. And I'm happy I'm from that part of the world, and not just Serbians, the entire ex-Yugoslavia. We all went through a lot, and that made us a lot stronger. And I think that's why a lot of people from back there are very successful.
Yeah. Hey, we must talk hoops, right? I know you're from Colorado, and you have one amazing Serbian there, which we talked before, and I told you he's not Serbian because he's out of this world. I don't know from where he is, right? And we talk about Jokic, Nikola Jokic, of course.
He's definitely one that breaks molds, for sure. And I think we can all learn a lot from him. He's a guy that focuses on, you know, doing what he's supposed to do, without a lot of fluff and, you know, a lot of fuss about things that are not related to what he does best. And I think by focusing on those things and being, you know, focusing on the fundamentals, he was able to achieve that. You know, we all know what he achieved. And the third MVP is coming, I'm sure.
It's coming, for sure. And also, you know, eliminate all the noise. I mean, keep focusing on what you do. It's so difficult, right?
Exactly.
Great, Bo. Amazing. Anything else you want to add?
No, I want to thank you for having me. It was a great conversation.
Great. It's a pleasure. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you, Bo.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us on this episode. Your support means the world to us. If today's episode has been insightful for you, consider sharing it with someone who would also benefit. Even one share can make a big difference. Looking to elevate your e-commerce game? Discover Vimi, a multi-channel e-commerce platform that will transform your business with the power of shoppable video. Visit us at vimi.net to learn more. It's Vimi, V-I-M-M-I.net. Thank you for being part of our journey. Stay tuned for more invaluable insights in our next episode.